The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. For several programs now, we have been looking generally at characteristics of insects. I'm not sure that we have spent a lot of time tying in those characteristics with the process of evolution. But my hope is that the more you find out about any living thing, whether it's an insect or a dog or a people, once you have some knowledge of those organisms, the more knowledge you have about those organisms, the less able you will be to swallow the notion that all of the complexity of those organisms simply occurred as a matter of randomness and chaos. I remember early in this series of programs, and now we're talking several hundred ago, I mentioned a statistic which might not hurt to repeat right now. The Encyclopedia Britannica says that the information content of a simple cell has been estimated at around 10 to the 12th bits. That simply means that you multiply 10 by itself 12 times, and that figure is a trillion. I have mentioned several times on the program that it is my own opinion that no sane person can really have any kind of a working concept of what 1 million is, let alone billions and trillions. But for those of you with some mathematical background, that will convey some information to you. And the interesting thing about that is that I think it was Carl Sagan who came up with the idea that there are about a trillion letters in all of the books in the largest library in the world. So we look at a bacterial cell and find that in that single cell, there are more bits of information than there are letters in all of the books in the world's largest library. Now, whether you understand much about mathematics or not, that's complicated. And when we look at cells that are more complicated than bacteria, or in the case of the organisms that we're discussing right now, insects which are multicellular, I'm not sure we can... I don't know how people would calculate the number of cells in a human being, for example. I've read all sorts of figures about the number of blood cells that are there and the number of nerve cells that are there, etc. And I think at best these are simply educated guesses. But treat that however you wish. If you have a bacterial cell with a trillion bits of information in it, the eukaryotic cells, those cells that have a nucleus, are more complicated. And when you have an organism like the human body that has probably trillions of cells, again, you're multiplying numbers that just go beyond the ability of the human mind to conceive. And while I would not rest all of my arguments on the idea that that kind of complexity simply does not occur because of randomness and chaos, I think that's a very legitimate argument. There, of course, are a great many others as well that would be the basis of our rejecting the idea of evolution. I have been a member of Creation Research Society for a number of years, and as some of you perhaps know, I'm on the board of ICR, the Institute for Creation Research. I've been there for several years. And the discussions recently, I don't know whether some cases they come in cycles, but sometimes there are simply new ideas that come up. And in trying to deal with these sorts of mathematical numbers, it helps if you have some background in mathematics. But the complexity that's involved is simply beyond human comprehension. We've talked on occasions about the statistics involved in coin flipping and games like pickup sticks and whatever. And common sense tells you that complexity simply does not arise out of randomness and chaos. And the evolutionists, of course, try and argue exceptions about this, like water freezing and so on, and I'm not sure we've ever talked about that. But at least for a person of reasonable intelligence who is thoughtful, it just does not make sense that something complicated like this comes about through a process of evolution. I think it's important, I started to mention to you, there's been some discussion recently on CRS about the idea of this kind of problem that exists. I read an illustration some years ago about the idea of a evolution was, some, was compared to the idea of starting off on the top of a hill on in a unicycle, on a unicycle, and as you roll down the hill, you are transformed, the machine is transformed first into a bicycle and a tricycle and a four-wheel vehicle, and you finally end up at the bottom of the hill in a 747. And that kind of an illustration is really not excessive. It is really an understatement of the problems that we run into when we are trying to examine the complexity of living things. So, if you don't have a great deal of knowledge, some of you perhaps have not spent a lot of time in school, still, I would expect most of you to have a reasonable amount of good sense. And just in thinking about these things, it really doesn't make sense. We are not aware of instances where these kinds of things could have occurred, and there certainly is not any evidence of it in science itself. Now, in our discussion of insects, we had gotten down to the point of looking at parasites. We have discussed relation of insects to man, how they're, what their uses are. We've talked, one of the primary ones that I think a lot of people probably do not give a great deal of thought to is simply pollination. Without insects to pollinate, we would really not have many fruits and vegetables. We'd have a few, have most of our major grain crops, which are generally wind pollinated, but we wouldn't have many fruits and vegetables. And we've talked about undesirable plants. Some of those are attacked or pollinated by insects. We talked about the effects of insects on plants. We talked about the fact that many people use some insects for food, which is not a very appetizing thought to some. Use in medicine and research. The fact that the insects have the ability to cause all sorts of undesirable effects, destroying things that are of use to man, food or houses or whatever, clothing. And we're ready to look now at a section dealing with the matter parasites. And this is a rather interesting subject, simply from the standpoint, for creationists particularly, you will get the reaction often, well, how could God have created things and at the end of that six-day creative period looked at it and called it good, and then created things like tapeworms or viruses or bacteria or whatever? The Bible, of course, does not address this directly, so we are left with simply, to some degree, some speculation about it. The Bible does indicate plainly that there were changes as a consequence of Adam and Eve's sin in the garden. The Scripture talks about the facts that from that point there were thorns on plants. Apparently, prior to that time, there were no thorns. So we can conclude that there were some actual physical changes, somatic changes that occurred in plants and very likely in animals as well. So that apparently all of the organisms were free living prior to the flood. And God caused certain effects that would change some of those into parasites, for any person with any knowledge of that. This means that there would have to be some rather, in some cases, great changes in the organism to go from a free-living organism to a parasitic organism. Many of the parasites lack body systems that free-living organisms do. And with the silence of Scripture about that, we simply have to turn to some level of speculation, and it is my personal opinion that along with the effects of the curse, God saw fit to cause changes in both plants and animals. If that is not satisfying, rest assured that the evolutionists do not have any substantive answer either. They don't have any. There wasn't any scientist around at that point to observe what was happening. So neither side really has the ability for an airtight case about how these things occur. I still have a great deal of difficulty with the idea that the parasitic relationship could have evolved, that somehow you had a close relationship between two organisms, and over a period of time, that relationship changed until one of the organisms became totally dependent on the other, and at some point then began to cause ill effects in the host organism. Excuse me. The desirable condition, relationship, would be for two organisms to be dependent on each other without either having any ill effects of the other. And presumably there are some examples of that symbiosis in nature. But there is not any really compelling argument to deal with the question of how one organism could change from a free-living state to a parasitic state. To simplify all of this, could Adam have gotten a cold? Would there have been viruses in the Garden of Eden that would have caused Adam to have a cold? Well, first of all, his body would have been such that he certainly would have had a very effective immune system, I presume, even if there wasn't anything there to cause it to react. But my response to the question would be, I suspect there probably were not, that these also were things that occurred as a result of God changing a number of things following Adam and Eve's sin. And as we will talk about a little bit, there are some insects that are parasites. And perhaps more importantly, there are some of the insects that act as hosts or vectors for pathogens, for some of the most important diseases that man knows anything about. And we will talk about those a little bit on our next program.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.